The following views and opinions are not necessarily those of Valley FM, any of its staff, management, ownership, or any affiliates.
When my own radar start picking up items going 3,000-4,000 miles an hour in this area.
But I do remember speeds in excess of 4,000 to 5,000 miles an hour.
And he said it was traveling 10,000 miles plus.
And they were going somewhere in the neighborhood of 11,000 to 14,000 miles an hour.
They covered the distance from Columbus to Detroit in something like equivalent of about 20,000 miles an hour.
And I heard a couple women there in the Air Force talking about aircraft Mach 10 plus, you're at Mach 10 plus, flying in and out of the atmosphere at Mach 10 plus.
This is Conspiracy with your host Earl Benezet on Alley FM. Earl Benezet, former Kentucky MUFON chapter director, explore the possibilities of life out there and other conspiracy theories. Conspiracy with Earl Benezet starts now on Alley FM, the best of the best.
Welcome to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benezet, and my special guest, Dirk Vanderplu, who is the publisher of UFO Digest, does some editing once in a while, but mainly it's Robert Morningstar, he says, that does his editing. Anyway, Dirk's got a lot of interesting stuff to tell us about his travels and about certain UFO cases and other things in general. He could talk about a book if he wants, if he has one. And here you go, Dirk.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Basically, I'd like to tell your listeners just a little bit about me, I guess.
Sure.
I'm 61, as I was telling you before, and my background is in publishing. I used to live up in Canada, and I used to work for the Toronto Star, which is a huge newspaper, and the Hamilton Spectator, and I was a publisher of various magazines during the 1980s, 1990s. And when the internet came about, basically, I decided to start publishing my own online magazine. So basically, I've been doing the same thing ever since college.
Great.
Which I really enjoy. I've always been interested in UFOs and the paranormal. So UFO Digest was really a natural outlet for me. I've been reading and watching TV, such shows as The Twilight Zone, of course, classic, and other shows, One Step Beyond, and I guess my brothers and my sister and my mother was really into the paranormal, into just discussing it and watching, you know, experiencing weird things happening throughout their life, so it's a natural outlet for me, and we've been doing it since 1998, and I'm very happy with it.
Great. What kind of UFO incidents in particular stick out in your mind of all the different articles that you've had on the subject?
Well, the people I've interviewed over the last probably 6-7 years, there's these mass sightings which are commonplace almost in Mexico, but you see them in Greece, you see them in Poland, you see them all throughout Europe. It seems that with technology, especially in photography with the digital cameras, we're capturing far more UFOs today and unidentified flying phenomena than we ever have before. And I think it has to do with the electronics. The chemical process that we all learned originally in photography just doesn't seem to capture that spectrum of light.
Especially infrared, right?
That's right.
Yeah, I'm trying to tell people that. Some people in MUFON didn't really want to listen to me. They kept saying that it was different orbs that I would catch. I know were orbs because it was pitch darkness, and they'd say, oh, you know, it's just dirt and it's just that. But some of these orbs were 10 feet across.
Right.
How do you get something 10 feet across in pitch blackness that's red and green and blue? You know, I just don't get it. I think they just...
They say it could be condensation.
Yeah, yeah, but this guy is, I have a guy that's in Pleasureville, Kentucky. I don't know if you've heard of him. I'm going to do a show with him one of these days. He's got over 30 gig of pictures, if you can imagine. And every day it's going up. He takes thousands of pictures a day of what you call splats and sprites. And I don't even know, I didn't think he knew what he was saying, but maybe he's researched it before. But what he's calling them is what the general public is calling them too. And what, ufology calls them. Here, this thing, a sprite, it looks like a little rocket in the distance, almost like it's got fire come out of one end. And you know, it looks like a UFO.
Yeah, appeared all over North America and South America.
Yeah, and the splats he gets that look like there's tubes coming out of this bright white spot, kind of like a splat, like something went plop on a board. And in these tubes, you see actually orbs lined up, ready to come out. And he says he can see them coming out by the thousands. I don't see that, of course, you know.
Do you think there's any possibility that these are interdimensional?
Yeah.
So really, all you're seeing is a glimpse of what it is, and the whole object is larger. And we're only seeing the part of it that's evident in this dimension. Or
yep, and I also agree that it's possible that that UFOs, the reason why many of them just wink out when people say, oh, it just disappeared, is that they raise their frequency and they become invisible in plain sight. We know now that if you pulse anything in ultraviolet, X-ray, and gamma, it's invisible. And I love to talk about the Tether incident where, you know, we saw 200 or 300 of these almost 3 mile across, I want to call them motherships, that are pulsing. They're round. They've got a hole in the center, quantumized hole, lack of light. It looks like a miniature black hole, you know, pulsing like a fish's mouth, pulsing, opening, closing. And each one with a U-shaped cutout, and they're going behind the Tether. Now, NASA, I believe, lies and says, you're looking at engine effluent because they want to explain it away. Well, engine effluent is right in your face. This stuff is 77 miles away behind the Tether, followed to 110, and NASA just happens to have this multi-million-dollar high-level CCD ultraviolet camera. So at the time they turn on the camera, they admit the Tether's glowing a half a mile wide, the objects are glowing 3 miles across, and they admit that, but then they say they're just engine effluent. And I say, horseshit.
That's right. Are you talking about the notched ships that are apparent?
Yep, the so-called Tether mission STS-75. I call it, when people, I ask them to search on Google, go to video, make sure they have Adobe Flash Player installed, otherwise they won't see it, and type in a line to go and search for evidence, the case for NASA UFOs, that video that Dan Aykroyd introduces David Sirita, and they talk about this, and David Sirita talks about the letters that he sent to NASA and this and that, and they go into pretty well depth. It's a 3-hour and 10-minute movie.
Yeah, isn't he going to be on the History Channel too?
Yes, and also David Sirita. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Do you have a computer in front of you?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, can you go to my site?
Sure.
And the URL would be israel.html after theufodigest.com.
Okay, you better say that one more time. I didn't have it
up. All right, go to ufodigest.com.
Okay.
/ Israel.html.
Forward slash
Israel. I just want you and your listeners to see something.
Okay. Looks like I didn't get it. Maybe I typed it wrong.
Israel.
Oh, I know what I did wrong.
Okay.
I missed the M and com. That was pretty bad. ufodigest.com/israel.html. I bet I get it now. Yes, this looks better. It's coming up.
Because I've got a video which, unfortunately, I can't show anybody. I can just show stills from it.
Mm-hmm.
From an Israeli lawyer who wanted to sell this video for $1 million. But I've got a UFO that...
wow, this is the notched, yeah.
Yeah, that is the notched vehicle. But yeah. I've got 3 dimensions of the thing.
Wow.
Not just this thing floating in space.
Wow.
And all 4 of those photos you see, or 5 in a row, 6 in a row, are all part of a guy standing on his balcony videotaping the odd craft as it banks and comes toward him.
Wow. You know what I think is the most interesting is the center, the last couple of pictures, it looks like a strange kind of a star.
Yeah.
And or, yet, you know.
Yeah, who knows what it is, but yeah. It looks like it's part of a machine, for sure. There's something, there's definitely something technological about it.
And I bet this is huge, of course.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can't tell what the size was, but mm-hmm. It's actually, when you're looking at it coming straight on, like
right.
That's the third one down. Looks more like a delta-shaped aircraft.
True, yeah.
And then it completely goes into a totally round up with
wow.
with the double notches. And
wow.
Robert Morningstar is my editor, and Robert, his main job basically is to speak with other writers
mm-hmm.
and to get writers on board and to basically go out and get the best articles, in-depth articles that we can and put them on UFO Digest.
Well, you're doing a great job, I got to say
that's
that.
That's basically what he does.
We got to take a break in about 5 seconds. So here we go, 3, 2, 1. Well, welcome back. Let's go back, take a 2-minute break, and we'll be back with Dirk Vanderpool. This is Conspiracy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Susie Orman with an important message from the FDIC about keeping your money safe and sound. Recently, I got a letter from a woman who told me she took all of her money out of the bank and put it in a shoebox in her closet. What was she thinking? That's not a safe thing to do. You know what I told her? Put it back in the bank now. If your money is in an FDIC member bank and you stay within coverage limits, you have no reason to worry. You can't lose a penny no matter what. That's a lot safer than a shoebox, if you ask me. How can you make sure your money is totally FDIC protected? If I were you, I would want to know that. So here's what I want you to do. Go to myfdicinsurance.gov and click on Edie the Estimator and find out. That's Edie the Estimator at myfdicinsurance.gov. Go there today. Because the more you know, the safer your money.
I'm NASCAR driver Bobby Labonte. At 200 miles per hour, many unseen dangers can arise in the blink of an eye. That's why we have spotters high above the track. They help drivers avoid trouble. Parents need to play the same role when it comes to kids and computers. As a parent, I know the internet can take kids to wonderful sites for learning, entertainment, and fun, but it can also lead to danger. Here are some safety tips. Keep the computer in a family area where you can see it. Proactively teach your children never to share personal information online. Become knowledgeable about signing onto websites, searching for information, and using email and instant messaging. Doing so will help you recognize potential dangers. Familiarize yourself with safer websites and post that list by your computer. Like our spotters, parents are best positioned to see the dangers kids could face online and to help them avoid them. Make a commitment to keeping kids safe online.
A message from WebWise Kids and Ask.com.
Welcome back to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benizet, and my special guest, Dirk Vanderpool. And Dirk, so where were we?
I think we were talking about the tether incident and
a
unique video I have that was given to me by an Israeli lawyer, which really shows the same object up close and personal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking at it now, and like we said before, if you can go to www.ufodigest.com/Israel.html. And you can kind of look at what we're looking at. One looks like a picture right out of, Evidence the Case for NASA UFOs. The others, you can see, look a lot closer. As you said, he was on his porch or his deck.
He was on his balcony of an apartment building.
Balcony, okay, cool.
And a friend of his in a neighboring city said, yeah, I saw a strange light in the sky flying your way. And realizing it, that this lawyer had a video camera.
Wow. Cool. Cool. Well, what other incidents would you say stand out? Anything in particular?
I get a lot of reports of, one of the strangest things I've ever heard is this case in Puerto Rico, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. And this woman and her kid were terrorized by UFOs that would fly over. It's not a daily, weekly basis, and would stalk them from their backyard, which bordered on a jungle.
Interesting.
And it's really interesting because the I'm going to try to look that up now as you're speaking. But her husband was a warden of one of the main jails in New York City. And they'd retired there. And
interesting.
It was just the horror of the whole thing. And eventually it came out that the woman who contacted me, but she really doesn't speak English very well, her name was Maria Rivera, drew some pictures of what the aliens looked like and strange symbols that were on some of their hands. And eventually it came out that Maria, and her kids, and her daughter, were kidnapped by, or taken by the aliens.
Did she ever have any regression done to her?
I guess being so terrorized. No, they haven't yet.
Okay. Are they thinking about that? Has anybody approached them about doing that?
You know what's wrong with, one of the things that's wrong with our community? Is I'm up in Canada, as you know, or you may
right.
not know. I'm just the other side of Lake Erie.
Looks like a nice area, too. I was looking at pictures of it.
Yeah, we're about 30 miles from, I guess, Niagara Falls and about 20 miles from Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I called some reporters I know, some UFO investigators in Puerto Rico. I'm not going to give any names or anything. And
right.
I said, contact these people. And I gave them the phone number. And they never did.
Wow.
No follow-up at all. And the story has come up again on another website. Somebody sent me a link to it. But originally, this whole thing started in and around the summer of 2005. No, November 2005. And it's progressed since then. And if anybody wants to read about it, all they have to do is go to UFO Digest in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
Encounters, then it'll come up. I can give you the address.
Are these abductions ongoing? Is this still happening?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it is.
Did they tell anything about what's happening to them while they've been abducted?
No. And that's not the weirdest thing. The weirdest thing is they don't take the husband ever.
They don't listen to him, or they don't...
No, they don't take him.
Oh, they don't take only her.
They take her and her daughter.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Maybe they're concerned about impregnating them or something, or, you know.
Well, hopefully not, but I don't... I'm not one of these feel-good UFOologists that believe that ET's here to save the planet bullshit.
Well, I don't discount it, but I don't say that's the total picture either. I think there's some here to help us, and there's some here that wouldn't mind taking the planet for themselves.
I think a lot of them would like to take it for themselves.
Hmm.
Yeah, you're right. There are a lot of different alien races that are here, from what I understand, from what I've been led to believe. Any of them, they look like gray to the Swedish athletic type.
Yeah, the Nordics.
Yeah.
And then you have some people say reptilians, ant-like creatures, praying mantis-like creatures, driving a starship. And I was like, wow.
I've heard of the praying mantis, but
My attitude is that's why we had the, you know, what Wernher von Braun said, you know, there's going to be this ET attack, why we're being set up by the media. You know, Independence Day, they're attacking us. Signs are attacking us. War of the Worlds are attacking us. Remade by Steven Spielberg. Aliens, Aliens 2, Aliens 3, they're attacking us. All the bug movies. I don't think they're here to attack us in that sense. I think they help, maybe with God's help, they help put us here. Now
that's possible. I think that as a race, we were cheated at some point in the past.
Yeah, there's just no corollary in the background with, you know, all of a sudden, boom, there's Homo sapiens. Hello.
That's right. Yeah, something had to assist us in some way.
Kind of like Zechariah Sitchin's the Sumerians and the Anunnaki, those who from space came and
Anunnaki,
and decided to make us in their image so that we could be their slaves and mine the gold.
I believe it. Why not?
Yeah.
As good a story as any.
Yeah. I think maybe they're the ones that really built the pyramids. I don't think the Egyptians did.
Yeah, I agree with you, Earl.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people disagree with it. Well, we know in the Bible it says that the Nephilim were here, you know, and they did a lot of this stuff, and I think they were the Anunnaki. There's another name for them.
Yep. And then they talk about Marduk in the Bible, which is really Nibiru, and blasted into Tiamat, which really most of Tiamat is earth.
Right.
And if you take the water out of, I see this picture and it just blew my mind. When you see a picture of Earth with all the water taken out, it's half a planet.
Yeah, it is, for sure.
And I'm like, wow. And then you got the moon, which is a piece off of Nibiru, apparently, because that's why the minerals don't coalesce with ours from the planet Earth.
Right. Pretty amazing, just found water there, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. That they'll admit to it, too. What scares me is this missile thing that they're going to blast into the moon in this part of this crater, and it said, I can't back this up, it said that where it's going to hit is there's actually a colony of some extraterrestrials living there.
Well, I think if that were true, they wouldn't blast anything because, you know, it could be like Independence Day all over again.
Yeah, we have a real war, but some people say that that's what some of these people in the military want, that they want a Star Wars to continue the military-industrial complex.
I think that's a bit extreme.
Yeah.
I think we have the technology right now.
Well, I think we have particle weapons. I mean, I think actually, now you may not agree with this, but you know, if you go on Google and you type in MTHEL, M-T-H-E-L, and it stands for Magnetothermo-Hydrodynamic Electromagnetic Laser, invisible beam that fires 25 miles away. The weapon is 12, 15 feet across, sits on a truck bed, gimbals. They fired it at 3 7-foot-long Katusha rockets, Palestinian Katusha rockets.
Right.
Took out one, took out the other, took out the other. Then prior to that, artillery shells, the only way to get away is duck and cover, took out a bunch of artillery shells. And that was a year before 9/11. I believe on 9/11, we used a particle dematerialization weapon because those buildings were turned to dust. I mean, you only have a floor and a half of steel. Where did the rest of the steel go? Steel doesn't turn to dust.
Yeah, there's some interesting questions still need to be answered about 9/11, for sure.
Yeah, I could go on. I'm going to have Andrew Johnson of the UK probably will talk about that among UFOs and about crop circles and all that, too.
Right.
He gets into that pretty heavily.
Do you know, have you come across people that seem to be able to walk out of their house and aim a camera in the sky and take pictures of UFOs?
Yes, that's this guy in Pleasureville, Kentucky. He's got about 30 gig of pictures. They're not daylight UFOs, though, so are they really the standard UFOs? I'm not sure. They're more like sprites and splats and things like that.
Well, I have a guy who lives in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Actually lives in a suburb of Toronto called Oshawa. And his name is Paul... And the story was, if you go to my site on the front page, you will just see a story that's called Morphing UFO. And he's got the most incredible photographs of an object he took like September 17th.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I've seen objects similar to this all over the world.
Are these pictures on your in your magazine?
Yeah, on my website.
Oh, they're on the website. Okay, that's
yeah.
Right. I keep thinking it's a physical magazine. I keep forgetting it's online.
Yeah.
In these
I'd
days.
I like to publish it one day, but just cost a fortune.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this chap who I've known for years, he's been emailing me, seems to be able to go out on a weekly basis and shoot some object flying across the sky.
Wow.
And it's not just photography, it's video as well. But it, I don't know if you had a chance to go look at the first page. But he's got this object that looks like an outboard motor, basically just flying in the air.
Hmm. Is this that same page you gave me before, or is it a different one?
No, it's my first page. That's for UFODigest.com.
Okay, so take off the Israel HTML, and here we go.
Yeah, we got everything there from the Olivia Newton-John.
Congratulations. You've been selected to receive an Apple iPhone.
I can't do that. I can't have my sound on and do that at the same time, unfortunately.
Okay, well, no problem, sure. But there are the weirdest things flying in the sky right now, and I don't know how to explain them. Or I can't tell you what they are.
Yeah, I like the ones that look like a one-man craft, kind of like cylindrical, like somebody's standing in it and they got their hands on controls and, you know, that they've seen in Puerto Rico and Mexico. Almost like there's some kind of test vehicle that the military is testing.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of test vehicles out there, a lot of new prototypes that the government, various governments, are experimenting with.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that we've actually been to the stars? See, that's my opinion, that I think we have, that those huge black triangles, some of them are theirs, but a lot of them are ours. The ones that are two football fields on a side, 700 by 700 by 700. I think we have a whole fleet. I think that's why they want this. Gary McKinnon from the UK, the United States, is desperate to extradite him because they want to shut him up.
Yeah, well, it could be. I know that there's a lot of controversy about, if you want to call it Nibiru or whatever, Planet X.
Yeah.
I believe, but it's a stretch. I think it's possible. I've seen photographs, supposedly government photographs, of a triangle type ship orbiting Nibiru.
Wow.
Who can tell if it's there or not? I mean, in the story.
Can they see that far?
Yeah. No, we went there, fairly. The U.S. government went there in these crafts.
Okay.
And Vatican's involved, and everybody's involved. I mean, talk about conspiracy. Probably the biggest conspiracy of all of them.
Yeah. Well, when you got the Vatican saying now for the second time, once through Father Balducci, another through the Vatican astronomer, saying that, you know, these UFOs, they're probably, if they're aliens, they're probably just our space brothers. It's like we're being prepared.
Yeah. Well, I firmly believe that they are. Sure. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, anyway.
Yeah.
But not all of them. Like you were saying before, there's a lot of different races coming here, and we're not really positive what each race's agenda is.
Yeah.
And that's the worrying part.
Do you think there's like a possible galactic federation or something, that some of them are part of a group and they're all just given permission to come and check us out?
Like a Star Wars
kind of
scenario.
Yeah.
Why not? Sure. It's possible.
Yeah.
All I know for sure is there's lights in the sky. There's something there. People are seeing it. Either people are delusional or they're being taken. There's just, as usual, too many questions, not enough answers. The people that would seem to know are the U.S. government, and of course they won't tell you anything.
Yeah, I have a problem with Dr. Clancy of L.A., this very attractive lady who's a psychologist who says, you know, they these people have been abducted. They really, 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 really want to believe they've been abducted, but they haven't been.
Disorders.
Yeah. And like the McGagee, you know, the Air Force poo-pooer, the typical poo-pooer, he's always Air Force retired, says about Rendlesham that the gentleman that actually saw the UFO come down and touched it, well, that's a disease.
Yeah, I know. I think Rendlesham is probably one of the most amazing UFO happenings that have ever been on this planet.
Yep, and I'm going to have Peter Robbins on my show in a couple of weeks. I can't wait to talk to him, too. Should be interesting.
Yeah, I would say. So where do you want to go now? What do you want to talk about?
You name it. We've got about, say, 2 minutes for the next break.
Okay.
We can start something.
UFO Digest, obviously by its name, deals with UFOs and aliens and abductions and everything else. But we also deal with paranormal. And one of the things I like to do is travel extensively. And like my wife and I were just in the summer. We managed to go to England because her parents are from England. And we went to Stonehenge. And the solstice, which is June 21st, 22nd, 23rd, most people don't know it's actually three. It's a three-day event.
Mm-hmm.
And the first day, I guess they let 40-something thousand people in, which basically means they take down the ropes and they take down the barriers so they can actually go in and cut the rocks and whatever and actually experience it. And then the next night, they hold it strictly for the Druids. And I was lucky enough to be invited to have my wife to go with the Druids and to spend the night, the 21st there and the 22nd, and to be taking photographs as the sun comes up the next day.
Wow.
And despite the weather being extremely cold, June 21st, too. Very odd, I thought then, because the rest of the time we were there was very warm. But yeah, it was an experience just to be part of the procession and to see the actual sun rise through the gate, and everything just suddenly explode with this gold color around you.
Wow, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, that's on my site as
well. Did you get some pictures of that?
Oh yeah.
Do you have them on your website, or did
yep.
you? Cool.
Yeah. It's,
great. Well, we've got to start this break. Stay tuned for Conspiracy with Earl Benazet. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes with my guest, Dirk Vandepuur.
Butcher.
Middle of the day, Alfred? Not very subtle.
The planet's best mix.
Much more subtle.
Ally FM.
Thanks for asking, but I'd rather not send you nude pictures. I'm camera shy. I already said no. It's against my religion. I'm giving my dog a bath. You can have pictures of that. Pressure gives me hives. Under my clothes, I'm a robot. Hold on. Let me ask my mom. Sorry, my webcam is broken. I'm worried they'll get passed around school. Unfortunately, I just had my clothes surgically attached to my body. If they got out, I might never be president. I'm already naked, under my clothes. Not even if you were all three Jonas Brothers. I have a rash. I have nudophobia. I have lizard skin. The more you ask, the less I want to. You're not the boss of me. Nudity makes me vomit. I'm a vampire, so I don't show up in pictures anyways. Your badgering has really killed the mood.
When someone is pressuring you to do something you don't want to, how many ways can you say no before they get the message? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
We'll be right back. something's wrong. I guess I fuck things up. Saw me shine, but I'm in the shade, and I don't know what it is or where it came from. I guess it's here.
Welcome back to Conspiracy with Earl Benizet and Dirk Van de Pew. I suppose we're going to continue talking about Stonehenge, Dirk.
Thank you. Stonehenge is one of these places. When I was working, I guess, in the late 80s, I was working for a tourist magazine. And I got to travel and write a few stories. And one of the times I was in England, I got to go to Stonehenge for an afternoon, basically. It was in February, a rotten time of year to be there. But I could see it, but I couldn't touch it because they had barriers up, they had ropes up. Mm-hmm. And I always hoped I'd have an opportunity to go back one day and actually experience the rocks for what they were. And ironically, I wrote that in one of the articles that I have written on UFO Digest, and Robert Morningstar, my editor, actually read the article and contacted me and has been my friend and editor ever since, which is
pretty
cool.
Yeah.
And he's a member of the Druids.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah. And he got the invitation for my wife and I to go over there. And there's some fascinating photos on UFO Digest, and all you have to do is go in and put in Summer Solstice or Stonehenge, and it'll be one of the stories listed.
Cool.
And I think that if you ever get the chance, you should do it.
I'd love to.
I have the advantage of, I mentioned before, my wife's parents are from there, and they still live there. So they live less than an hour from England, from London. So it's basically easy to just get on a train and go somewhere.
That's great.
It was almost as if you were in the Grail legend, being at this place on this day, because it's 5 o'clock in the morning and you can see the sun beams just beginning to turn the black sky into purple.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the gold sneaking in. And then a mist comes up from the valley and covers the entire area.
Wow, that's trippy.
And you don't see the sun till the sun is probably, I'd say, 60 degrees, 70 degrees off the horizon. And it actually has to burn its way through the fog before you see it standing there. And I know it's very hard to imagine, but if anybody wants to go to UFO, see it quite easily. And that's one of the experiences that I will never forget.
Mm-hmm. Would you say if anybody wants to go to, is it UFO Digest or?
Digest.com.
Okay.
And just put in Stonehenge or put in Summer Solstice, and they'll find it without any problem at all.
Right. I got this strange click when you said that, and it just dropped out.
Sure, no problem. One of the other things we just did in England this year is we investigated what's called the Green Children. I don't know if you ever heard of them. The Green Children of Wolf Pit.
No, I haven't heard of them.
Wolf Pit is a small town in Suffolk, which is on the east coast, more towards the east in England. And around 11:35, two children were discovered either at the bottom of or near a pit. And basically, a wolf pit is a quarry that they used to catch wolves in and kill them.
Uh-huh.
So Wolf Pit, it's actually called Wolf Pit today. W-O-L-P-I-T, but it means wolf pit.
Interesting.
And these children were found at the bottom or near, like I said, near this pit. And they had green skin and green clothes on. And they couldn't speak the local language. And they couldn't eat any of the local food.
Where are they now?
This is 1135.
Oh, okay.
Dead.
Unfortunately.
Very, very dead.
Wish they were alive. We'd like to interview them.
I would. But the story basically is that they came from a place called St. Martin's Land, which was in the inner earth. And the boy died. There was a boy and a girl. And the boy died. The girl, she grew up. Her skin became pink like ours. And she eventually got married, and she went to work for this knight and stay at his place before she got married. And the story has been chronicled by three different historians, all in and around the 11th and 12th century. So
that's
basically what we wanted to do, or I wanted to do, was go actually track down the areas in the story to see if they actually existed. And we found, obviously, the town of Woolpit. We actually found the pit itself. We found where the squire or the knight lived. Basically, we documented the entire aspects of the natural story that we could. And as far as we know, the woman lived. She got married, and she has children, or at least ancestors of children, still living in Britain today. Where she came from, I have no idea. But the story is, she came from
the inner earth.
The inner earth.
Interesting.
And I had no problem believing in the inner earth, in that at some point in our prehistory or pre-Diluvian days, isn't it possible that when an ice age came or some natural disaster came, that some people did seek shelter in the earth?
Sure. Yeah, that's possible.
And probably went deeper, and maybe they found something to eat. I know there's animals down there. Scientists come across strange animals all the time and shit. And there's some kind of plankton and other type of leachy vegetables and things that live in no light. It's just one of these things that, I guess for a long time, I'm an avid reader. And the story has fascinated me, and I got the chance to go check it out. And,
that's great when you can do that. I wish everybody could do that.
I'm writing a story about it, and it should be ready in a couple weeks.
Great. Yeah, I'd love to try something like that. I've always, when Admiral Byrd went to Antarctica, my father was on the ship, and he said they saw some strange stuff.
Your father was on that ship?
Yeah, he was an expediter. And a chemical engineer, and he once told me, sat me on his lap when I was 5 years old, and said, son, if they ever tell you there's no such thing as UFOs, aliens, don't believe them, they exist. And I always wondered why he told me that.
And probably because it's true.
Yeah. Duh.
I've actually photographed a UFO from the lake up here. I can tell you about it if you like.
Sure.
The closest I've ever come to seeing a UFO, and I really can't really tell you what it was to this day. The video is on my website. It's just called Lake Erie UFO. If anybody wants to go searching for it. I was watching a planet one night. I guess it was about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. It was probably Venus or Mars. Probably Mars. And there was two satellite objects next to it on either side, which I thought were just stars. But they seemed to be following this planet as it went through the sky. So I went and got the video camera after watching this thing for about half an hour. And the one on the right had disappeared. And there's still this object on the left. And when I started videotaping that, what it did is it slowly went from 100% brilliant to about 10% brilliant, kind of faded out, and then moved to the right.
Interesting.
Like it actually moved. I mean, you can see it. I slowed it down. And what kind of object can do that? And then disappear. None that I could think
of. Not a star.
No, not a planet. And it certainly wasn't a helicopter or something. So it was a true UFO in that it was an unidentified flying object. Flying in that it was there. Mm-hmm. It was up in the sky. But strange things that we see.
Do you think that we have a base on Mars and a base on the moon? And that there's aliens on the far side of the moon, like some people have said?
I think, as a publisher, I have to, try to be credible as well as, we can all have our imagination.
Right.
I haven't seen any proof of that. What I've read is that the U.S. Army has had a base on the far side of the dark side of the moon. Since probably the early 60s, if not the late 50s.
Along with aliens, that there's, I've heard there's hundreds of buildings on the far side of the moon.
Yeah, that's what I understand. And what'll be interesting in the next couple of years, if the U.S. government doesn't come out and admit that we have had contact with extraterrestrials, like this is the Japanese, the Europe Satellite and Space Agency, that they're going to be releasing photographs from the dark side of the moon.
Wow, that'll be a trip.
That's what's going to show up there. I think there's been a civilization living on Mars for probably 300,000, 400,000 years.
Wow.
They may be gone now, but I believe that was one of the bases or stop points when the Anunnaki came from Uru.
Yeah, I've heard, there's x-ray pictures, infrared pictures of cities that are underground, actually between the face on Cydonia and the pyramids.
Yeah.
And there's other areas. As a matter of fact, if you go to www.marsstructures.com, we're finding, and this blows my mind, hundreds of cities on Mars that you don't see the buildings, but you can see these are not stress fractures from earthquakes or volcanoes. That they look, there's cul-de-sacs, there's highways, there's, and it's from Mars. They're NASA's own pictures.
Right.
It's amazing.
Well, I firmly believe that somebody's been there. There has been some civilization there. And Richard Oakland is right. And he's been kind of like a lone voice in the wild, proclaiming this for 20 years. And now more scientists are actually siding with him, admitting that the structures on Mars are definitely man-made.
Yeah, I've heard a scenario that in the 60s, we were worried about a nuclear exchange destroying what we now call the human genome, and that they, the aliens, helped a number of British scientists, men and women, not top scientists, but supposedly about 300 went missing in the 60s, and that they were brought to Mars to procreate and carry on the human race. And now I hear numbers like 60, 70,000 people are there, not necessarily those originals also, but others have gone since. That's the scenario. Is that true? I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. It was called Alternative 3.
Okay, and that's one of the basic problems I guess we have. We have the science fiction part of us that want to believe that all these things are possible, and then you got the hard evidence, and really what hard evidence is there?
Well, when you have that, like I had my last week's show, I had Lloyd Pye, And he's got hard evidence. He's got that Star Child skull that was a misnomer in the first place, calling it that because scientists stayed away. But now it's actually becoming a fact that it is a Star Child skull. When you've got preliminary DNA testing, some of which was flawed, but he needs one more DNA test, which is unfortunately about $150,000. So he's trying to get the money to do that. He needs somebody with deep pockets to help him. But they found it's radiocarbon dated to be 900 years old. It is definitely, with DNA testing so far, proven to be an alien father and Earth mother. And then you've got the other gentleman taking implants out of people, you know, the podiatrist, who's got these 80-something implants. And when the metal is proven to be metal, it's not an isotope of the planet Earth. So we have more proof. Then we've got crop circles, the real ones, where there's proof of accelerated growth of the nodes. There's proof of expulsion nodes. Strings and boards can't do that. So there's more proof than people want to talk about.
You sound like a true believer.
Well, when you start putting it all together, and then you hear about, you know, Neil Armstrong saying before he did his one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, he was heard saying by ham radio operators, and some people say they have a copy of the tape, voice printed to be him, saying, my God, they're on the far side of the crater, and they're huge, and they're watching us. Yeah, I'm a believer. And you've got, what's his name, Buzz Aldrin saying, you know, there's a monument on one of the moons of Mars. He said this to the regular public, you know, on TV. And it's on one of the moons of Mars that looks like a potato. Well, that's Phobos. And he said, you know, when people get wind of that, they're going to ask, who put that there? And right. He says, oh, the universe, God. He specifically didn't say aliens, but he could have.
Apparently, there's two monoliths around, too, that they discovered.
Mm-hmm. So it's getting more and more interesting.
Yeah, the 2001 movie was based on something more than just a writer's imagination.
Yeah, and the Death Star?
Yeah.
You know, ever see the pictures of Iapetus, moon of Saturn?
Yeah.
I mean, it looks exactly like the Death Star with one feature added. And they're NASA-owned pictures, and there's this line running parallel to the equator, 12 miles high, 12 miles wide, running for 900 miles in three sections, pockmarked with real craters. But when you look at the craters, the regular craters, they're all hexagons.
That's right.
So I believe the moon, that moon is not a moon. It was put together.
Yeah, it was mechanical. It was a structure.
Yeah. So there's a lot of proof, really, if you think about it.
Well, I like Lloyd Pye, and I like read probably about three of his books. And he sent me the one last year about the skull. And it's a pretty fascinating story, how it's the density and the weight of the skull is considerably lighter than a human skull.
Yep, 50% lighter, and it's twice as strong. And he think he said it's woven with fibers that, like, it's been designed.
Yeah.
I love that. I was like, wow. Well, let's see where we're at. We've got to take a break right now. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is Earl Benezet on Conspiracy with Lloyd Pye. Excuse me. Mistake there.
Okay.
With Dirk Vandenberg.
Across 24 time zones, these are the hits and talk you want to hear. Ali FM, the best of the best. From the pristine air that surrounds Cave Run Lake to the ease of access of Interstate 64 to the friendly folks that have a small town feel with a big city appeal, Moorhead, Kentucky is the vacation destination that makes sense. Cave Run Lake is one of the most popular destinations for vacationers in America. Its sprawling 872 acres of clean blue water and land is a hub for boating, fishing, swimming, camping, and all sorts of outdoor activities. Lodging is affordable, and with Cave Run Cabin Rentals, you'll enjoy a beautiful mountainous view and the company of great friends, or that special someone. Great activities, fantastic dining, beautiful views. In Moorhead, Kentucky, we've got it all. For information about your vacation destination, call 606-784-5874. That's 606-784-5874. And ask for Rodney Hitch. In Moorhead, Kentucky, the only thing missing is you. This message has been brought to you by the Round County Tourism and Moorhead Economic Development Council, who really miss you.
If you're starting up a small business or already own one and you're looking to cater and market to a worldwide audience, AlleyFM.com could be your solution. Recently, Forbes magazine made the statement that internet broadcasting is a trend of the future. One of the most notable statements in this article was that most of the people that do business with the internet or on the internet had expendable incomes and greater earnings than $75,000 per year and more. To find out just exactly how small of an investment that you would have to make in AlleyFM.com to see substantial dividends and gains, call us toll-free at 1-888-722-3134. That's 1-888-722-3134. You can also email us, AlleyFMRadio@gmail.com. That's AlleyFMRadio@gmail.com. Let us put two decades plus of marketing experience to work for you.
Welcome to Conspiracy again with Earl Benezet and my host, Dirk Van de Pew. And we're going to continue. Dirk's got some more interesting stuff for us and also going to talk about his book. And he's also writing another book. Take it away, Dirk.
Thanks, Earl. One of the things I wanted to mention for your listeners is there was a series of meetings last year at the UN in New York. Apparently. According to certain people, it's been written about quite a bit on the internet right now. And in a nutshell, what they claim came out of these meetings was that sometime around 2013, extraterrestrials are going to make their presence known to mankind by, exactly like the movie V, centering their ship over the largest cities around the world.
Wow.
It was also in Independence Day. That's how they did it.
Wow. But they're not going to attack.
Well, they're supposed to wait there for 3 years or something and not disclose themselves and just wait and see what happens. Waiting for basically the United States to disclose the secrets that they've been holding back since 1947.
Okay, now the United States is going to be part of this. They're going to know that they're going to have to do this kind
they
of thing.
They are part of it. They already know it.
Yeah, okay.
They've known about it for quite a while.
Okay.
Actually, Michael Sala's written about it. Robert Morningstar has written about it. Quite a few people have. And actually, Robert Morningstar, my editor, was in some of the meetings.
Cool.
He was in meetings after the UN meeting. I don't want to say that he was at the UN. He wasn't.
Right.
But he met with some of the people involved in the meeting. And all the things that were discussed were pointed out to him and made public. So pretty interesting. And a lot of articles have been written about it. So all anybody has to do is go to UFODigest.com and put in UN or United Nations.
Looks like I'm going to have to stay around for another 4 years.
I think so.
Well, I'm going to try to.
I suppose that, I guess, shoots down the idea that we're going to end in 2012. Which a lot of people are predicting. I think we'll be around for quite a few more years after that, if not centuries and millennia.
I don't think it's really going to end. I think it's going to change somewhat, somehow.
Yeah, people discuss that. How do you think it's going to change?
Yeah.
So how would you think it would change?
They talk, a number of people talk different things. One talks about the vibrational change that we're going to be able to see, dimensional stuff that we can't see now. I don't know if that's true or not. Another said an asteroid could hit. I don't know about that. I think that that would be taken care of by the aliens. If so, I don't think they'd let it hit the Earth. Just like in 2002, an object was going across Turkey, was filmed, and it was about 4 miles across meteor, followed by a ship that was probably 3 miles across, fired some beams at it, and it exploded into thousands of pieces, and the alien ship followed it into the Aegean Sea. So we're already protected.
That's very strange.
Yeah. a lot of people don't even know that happened, of course. Yeah. But thanks to our wonderful meeting.
Some kind of spiritual reawakening. Not unlike Childhood's End. I don't know if you've read that book.
You know, I never got to the end of it. I got about halfway through it. And
right, that's for sure.
Yeah.
When you asked me about what books I've written, I guess all of us were kind of blown away by The Lord of the Rings, where they finally came to the big screen. And I was, just like everybody else. And one of the things that crossed my mind was, what if what Tolkien was writing about had actually happened? What do we know happened before the flood, approximately 4,000 B.C.?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any historical or biblical information that could tie into what Tolkien had written about? And what I discovered was there was quite a bit. Tolkien did have an understanding of antediluvian history.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the book's about. It's called Quest for Middle Earth. If anybody's interested, you can get it from Amazon.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, if I was to bring it back, which I'd like to, what else would you like to discuss?
I think we should probably stick to UFOs. There's a lot of UFO stories breaking right now. And in the near future, I'll have a lot more information I can disclose with your listeners.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds good. That sounds great. Well, I still got a little bit of time. Got about another five and a half minutes. I got till about 7 minutes.
Okay. One of the things I'm very happy with is the number of writers that we have on UFO Digest. If your listeners go there on a daily or a weekly basis, you'll discover that there's new articles posted every day. And these are not only about UFOs, they're about ghosts, they're about strange happenings, they're about Middle Earth. They're basically about every weird aspect of human life that you can think of. And what's really interesting is if you go to the end of an article, and you'll find our comments section. There's comments for every article.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And they've actually got readers logging in and telling your stories there. Sometimes the stories that I'm getting left as comments are far more exciting than the actual article itself.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
I write to
great.
People and ask them, you know, this thing's too long. You know, I comment a paragraph or something, they're giving me 2 pages.
Yep.
I said, put it in an article, and I'll publish it.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to break it off. We're really close to the end. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Dirk. And I hope to have you back soon. And I'm not going to say what our next show is going to be about. It's going to be a surprise. But thank you for listening to Conspiracy with your host, Earl Benazet, and my guest, Dirk Vandepuur. Have a good night.
Listening to Conspiracy with Earl Benazet and special guest co-host Bill Scott. Make sure to tune in again next week at this same time on Alley FM for Conspiracy with Earl Benazet. Email questions or comments to alleyfmradio@gmail.com. On behalf of Earl Benazet and Bill Scott, I'm Chris Long. Thanks for listening to alleyfm.com, the best of the best.